Hi, it's editor Chantel here. I'm just popping in to give you a content warning that in this episode there will be brief mentions of pregnancy loss and child marriage, and I will tell you when those are coming up. Hi, and welcome back to Uncited, the internet's least reliable English lit podcast. I'm Chantel.
And I'm Amy.
And today we are coming back for a little bonus on the Henry ad, I guess. We thought we were done, but we're not. We have been covering Richard II through Richard III by Shakespeare.
Via the Henrys.
It sounds like it's just two plays.
Yeah.
But there are several million plays in the middle since April. And now we have wrapped that up. And yet we are back with Shakespeare's Henry VIII. Amy is going to run us through it. Thank you so much, Amy. I did not read this.
Yeah, I hadn't either until yesterday, really. No, it was Sunday.
Encouraging.
Yeah. So I was looking through what I affectionately call my Nort, which is my third edition of the Norton Shakespeare as edited by Stephen Greenblatt.
Does he hear a who?
Yeah.
Norton hears a who?
Mm-hmm. Funny, haha. In my moments of weakness throughout university, I have been found dancing with this anthology of over 3,000 pages and also doing hexercises with it, which is healthy exercises. Think physiotherapy.
I think that's just exercises with a French-Canadian accent.
Sure, Bob. So I did that and I was going through it and I was like, oh, Henry VIII? That's funky. That's something we didn't study in class, but it's a Henry. Funky fresh. So let's give it a go.
Can I give a little bit of background on like how we got here?
Of course.
So basically, Shakespeare lives in the Tudor era. The Tudor is the line of Henry VII to, at Shakespeare's time, Elizabeth I. Shakespeare is a big simp for Elizabeth I, so he has been pretty complimentary to the Tudors and critical of the York line, which the Tudors are only like sort of descended from. But before that, there was a big war where the York line and the Lancaster line, which were two branches of the same royal family, were fighting over the crown for a bunch of years. And now we're in the Tudor era. Very exciting. We're out of the War of the Roses.
Correct.
I'm excited to hear about it.
It'll be fun. So to put some context, this is believed to be one of Shakespeare's last plays after The Tempest and before The Two Noble Kings.
Okay, never heard of that one.
Yeah, it's at the end of our anthology. It's fine, don't worry about it.
I won't.
To give some context, it was put on, around 1612 to 1613. And our last other play, like the last time he made a play in the Henriad, was between 1598 and 1599. Now, you, dear listener, buddy pals, have been going through this chronologically, historically with us, but I want to throw a wrench in your beliefs for a hot second.
Oh, goodness.
I'm going to tell you the order in which they were first performed.
Oh, God.
And I want you to remember what we said about these plays as we were going through. I think this is a fun tidbit of information. So the first play, Henry VI, part two.
What? Why?
I'll explain. The second play, Henry VI, part three.
Okay, I guess that makes sense.
The third play, Henry VI, part one.
So like a prequel situation.
All of these were like said to be published between 1590 and 1592, so there could have been some mistakes in the historic perception, but this is what the Royal Shakespeare Company says. So we do what we can with what we got.
So it was an original sequel-prequel layout of the Henry VI. Okay.
Yeah, like weird Star Wars. Then we have Richard III, which, okay, makes sense.
Yeah. That comes after Henry VI, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and then he was like, huh, Richard III, that did so well. Richard II.
Richard II, we're going all the way back.
All the way back.
Okay.
And then we're like, okay, Richard II, that makes sense. Henry IV, part one. Henry IV, part two.
Okay.
Henry V.
Now we're chronological.
Which, after that, somehow brings us back to Henry VIII.
Goodness. So it was like original, sequel, prequel, sequel to the sequel, and then go all the way back to the beginning and do a prequel series chronologically.
Correct.
Crushed it. He's just like Cassandra Clare.
Oh God, he really is. That's atrocious. Yeah, so that's fun. That's a thing that happened, a thing we should know about as we move forward, I think.
I don't think I hate that as much as you do.
How are you supposed to follow who everyone is if you don't know the place? in the order that the history happened. I mean, I guess they had like other ways.
Because of actual history, probably. Yeah. You know? Like, how are you supposed to know who Richard II is if you didn't know who Edward the Black Prince was?
Fair point. Who does not have a play?
History, just gonna history. It's gonna history all over the place. And then wherever you jump in, it's still gonna be history.
You're having a lot of fun with this peanut gallery thing, aren't you?
I am. I'm also day drinking because it's my last day of vacation.
That's fair. We are on board with this. Okay, so we have Henry VIII. Now, you might know Henry VIII, right? Because divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived.
Yep.
Which is his six wives, right?
Correct.
So we have Catherine of Aragon, Anne Boleyn, Jane Seymour, Anne of Cleves, Catherine Howard, and Catherine Parr.
Sorry, did he have, wait, two Annes and three Catherines?
Correct.
Two Annes and three Catherines. Why did no one have different names? They needed more names. I'm so glad they have more names now.
Oh, I also need to tell you that almost all of them served the previous queen in some form or another.
Oh.
And many of them were cousins.
I don't love that.
And his first wife,
okay,
was actually married to his brother before.
Did he do something to his brother to make that happen?
No, he died relatively young.
Okay.
She was just betrothed and the marriage was never consummated, so it was fine. Until it wasn't. This play. So, you know, you think about Henry VIII and you're like, yeah, there's so much gonna happen, right? So much political intrigue and fun beheadings.
Yeah, we've seen the other Boleyn girl.
Yeah. No.
No, it doesn't. No.
It is the least murdery play we've had so far.
Okay, so we don't see the two beheadings?
No, because you only meet two of the wives.
Does it at least focus on the other head?
Actually, kind of. You'll see.
Okay.
So this play, I posit, so to speak.
I love you.
Is not about Henry. It's not about Henry VIII at all. It's about Queen Elizabeth I.
Okay.
Who had like recently died. So by the time this play is put on, we're no longer in her reign. We're in the reign of James I, who is a Scottish king.
Oh, Scottish king. How fun. No, never mind. Not fun at all. That was a face of not fun.
The family tree for that part is, the word I think I'm going to use is confusing.
Okay.
Because just to give you some context, Elizabeth I, who gets born in this play, is Anne Boleyn's daughter with Henry VIII.
Okay, cool.
Okay. So we have Elizabeth, who is the daughter of Henry VIII. But then through Henry VII, who we don't really get to meet, we also have a Mary Queen of Scots.
Ooh, love her.
And a Margaret. So Henry VII's daughter, Margaret, married King James IV of Scotland, and then they had some kids and some people got married and other stuff happened, and then that's how we got James I in England.
Okay, that's who the King James Bible is named after, which is the worst one.
So all of this is super fun and interesting, but there's even more. So before Elizabeth came Mary I, who is the only living child of Catherine of Aragon,
okay,
who was married, is the first wife of Henry VIII, who we meet today.
Yep.
And before her was Edward VI, who was Jane Seymour's son with Henry VIII. So it went Henry VIII, then Edward VI, then Mary I, sometimes Lady Jane Grey, that's disputed, and then Elizabeth I, and then James I. So that's fun.
That is fun.
Yeah. And that's how we get from the Tudors to the Stuarts, because the Scottish line are Stuart.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that is a very Scottish name.
Correct. So now that we have all of that, I can get into the fire burning on the dance floor part of the conversation.
Okay.
So on June 29th, 1613, like in the like second production of this play.
Okay.
The Globe Theater burns down.
Ooh, drama.
Literally, which is fun. That's the whole point of that. It's just that that's a fun time. There were a lot of people in attendance, you know, only one person got injured. It's fine.
It's all cool and chill also.
Well, so they fired off some cannons and it had a thatched roof, which is just straw.
Why would you use that as a prop?
Pomp, circumstance, I guess, I'm guessing.
It's just poor planning.
Yeah, it's not great planning.
During the performance, they didn't even do like a dry run.
Oh no, this was like the second performance, so like they knew it was bad, they just did it anyways. Yeah,
they did a wet run.
So this play was written by Shakespeare, right?
I would imagine.
Not fully.
Oh goodness.
Also co-written by a guy named John Fletcher, who was also working for the same company, the Kingsmen, and he either co-wrote it or finished it. And once Willie Shakes was no longer around to have his job, John Fletcher became the most prolific playwright with The Kingsman. So we could be talking about Johnny Fletch instead of Willie Shakes, but here we are.
Fun.
Yeah, fun. It's also based on Hall Ashton's Chronicles and like Thomas More's work. So there's a lot of like same old, same old.
So basically Shakespeare was like the fan fiction writer with no new ideas. And then John Fletcher was like the Socrates to his Plato.
Yeah, or like the Amy to his Chantel.
Aww.
Because you know how Shakespeare's plays famously don't have a lot of scene direction?
I do, yeah.
This one?
He loves scene direction.
Paragraphs.
Incredible.
Flippy floppy paragraphs of words.
Okay, this does feel very Amy-esque.
Yes, very, you know, Amy to his Chantel. It's a play that's a lot about like divine providence and like questions the rightful heirs to the throne, which we have been dealing with, but not necessarily in this way. It's never been about the problem of like having kids. It's just like people fighting about which of their kids should be on the throne usually, right? Like when we think about the whole like John of Gaunt thing of it all.
Yeah.
You know, we've come a long way from stabbing people harder and into, dear God, why can't I produce a son?
There's a different kind of penetration going on now.
Yes. So in this, we deal with the rise and fall of a lot of great people, including the Catholic Church. So this is like the first Tudor play, if you want the real one, because Henry VII didn't get one. I don't know who he pissed off or what he did or didn't do, but you know, here we are.
Okay.
So it deals with national reconciliation, both in the sense of like it's a Tudor play, so York, Lancaster, but also in the like England, Scotland way, because you know, James I, he was the first king of both Scotland and England. So that's fun.
Fun.
It's written in blank verse and not an iambic pentameter, which is technically more of a feminine type of way of writing those plays. Usually those kinds of lines were only given to feminine characters.
Like Richard II.
Correct.
Nailed it.
So the entire play. The entire play. Which brings me back to the point of this is more about Elizabeth II than it is about Henry VIII and his progeniture.
Ooh. I love that.
You know, he didn't even sleep with Anne of Cleves because he thought she was too ugly.
She looks like a horse, he said in The Other Boleyn Girl.
Yeah. What I find interesting is on Wikipedia, all of his wives have like a side profile picture, like historical portrait, except for Anne of Cleves.
Oh.
Who you see straight on.
I'm looking her up.
Like, she's not unattractive. He's just a dick.
Okay, her painting's not unattractive, but they painted differently than they looked. But it doesn't matter. Because
doesn't matter.
Just be nicer to people.
Because you can't change your face. We don't criticize people for the shape of their face. We only criticize them about the straightness of their spines.
I really thought you were going to say the shape of their character. And then you said something else. And that was very fun for me. Thank you so much.
My scoliosis is acting up today, so fun.
Your spine is extra curvy today.
Yeah. I went for a massage and now it's all fucky. It's fine. Don't worry about it. See, she's fine. She's cute.
She's cute.
She's cute.
Anyway, go ahead.
And honestly, she lived the longest, so I think his dick was the problem.
Just the essence of dick.
She's the only one who did not have the essence of his dick and survived the longest, so I think, you know, all things considered. So the play opens with a prologue, which is like not a real character, but also not like a chorus. It's kind of weird. It's strange. Don't worry about it. And it tried to explain that this is a sad play and we should cry and that we should think about these characters as people of high rank. So it's still it's a nice play in the sense that it doesn't villainize really anyone important. So like Henry's not really villainized. He's a bit of a fuckboy, but that's different. Catherine is seen as like still this like great person because, you know, she's the mother of the latest queen, right? So that's kind of important.
Uh-huh.
Both of these women are mothers of the future queen of England. So like we try to be nice to them is basically what this play is saying.
Oh,
what?
I just always forget that everyone is relatives and I don't like it. Go on.
So the play opens on a conversation between the Dukes of Norfolk and Buckingham. Basically, Buckingham is the guy who took on Richard III. Remember?
Yeah, I do remember.
Okay, so he's here. And basically, he like, these two guys take it out. There's another guy, but I don't know how to pronounce his last name, so I'm not gonna, because...
Good.
Abergynavy.
But you're gonna anyway.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it. But anyways, he's there. He's not important. It's fine.
Abernathy?
Nope. Abergynavy.
Abergynavy. Okay. Trying to help you out here.
Maybe it's Gynavy? See, this is why I didn't pronounce it, but it's fine.
Henry VIII Dramatis Persona.
Abergynavy. Abergynavy.
Hang on a second. Give me a second.
Abergavenny.
Oh, what the fuck? Abergavenny.
Abergavenny. Okay, so Abergavenny's also there, but who cares?
That's an awful name.
I'm not done. So in this scene, they talk about like this guy named Cardinal Wolsey. So he's a cardinal that's really close to the king. Wolsey? Maybe it's Wolsey. Maybe it's Wolsey. I don't know. He's dead.
It's Wolsey.
And then, you know, they talk about his ruthless power and his pride and stop looking at the things. I'm going to be telling you about it.
I just don't like how long the dramatis personae is.
Oh, yeah. I was reading the performance notes in Norton and they were talking about how one of the plays when they put it on had a cast of like 140 something persons, which is a lot.
There's 37 named characters, but one of them is a plural, and also one of them is named Dr. Butts.
Yeah, that's true. He's there when Catherine's sick. Okay, that's beside the point. So anyways, Norfolk, Buckingham, and Abergavenny are talking about Wolsey and how he has like ruthless power and he has too much pride and he's kind of a dick. I call him the villain of the play if you ask me.
Okay.
And fucking Wolsey decides to get Buckingham arrested on treason charges.
Why?
Buckingham. He saved everyone. Now we're here. So then we meet King Henry VIII. And this scene really shows his reliance on Wolsey as his favorite. Then we meet Queen Catherine for the first time, which is great. In this adaptation that I watched from the Stratford Theatre in Stratford, Ontario, as recorded by the CBC and put on for free on CBC Gem.
Are you citing on our podcast? Gross.
No, I'm redirecting people to go watch it. There's a big difference. I didn't give you my DOI. So anyways, in this adaptation that I watched, we're presented to Queen Catherine, like, as she kneels down to the king, right? And he kneels down back to her, and then they start making out.
No.
In court, in front of everyone.
No.
Which is, like, a lot.
That's not very proper.
Right?
It's not very royal of them.
It's not, but, like, they were married for, like, 20 years, right? So, like, clearly, like, they had something going on. He was only married for, like, 2 years to all of his other wives. So, you know, I think they truly had a good relationship at some point in time.
Hi, me again. We are about to talk briefly about pregnancy loss, so if you don't want to hear that, please skip forward about 15 seconds.
Before he decided that she was not good enough to give him any sons, which is not by not trying, because she gave him six children.
She gave him six daughters?
No, so she did give birth to some sons. They just passed away really young. She had a lot of stillbirths, but she was like pregnant at least six times, if not more. So really, like, she deserved better. So she comes in and she's like trash talking Wolsey because he's being a dick with taxes. And the king's like, Catherine's my lady. I'm not listening to you. So Wolsey becomes a petty little pompous asshole.
Okay.
And it starts to be like, oh yeah, no, you know, I told the king not to have taxes anymore. I am the right-hand man. Yeah, no, Catherine, she wasn't even there, basically, is what happens.
Typical men taking credit for what women say in a meeting.
Yeah. And then Catherine's like, dude, maybe we shouldn't arrest Buckingham. And Wolsey's like, I think we should because this guy's telling us to. And the king's like, okay, fine. Let's keep on with the trial. Sure, whatever. It's fine. So then they have like a banquet, right? Wolsey's like, I'm rich. Let's do some rich people things. And like, they dance with, like, you know those fluffy boa things?
I do.
So they dance with this in the adaptation, which is fun.
Okay, fun.
And we meet Anne Boleyn, one of the queen's ladies-in-waiting.
Yes, Anne Boleyn, famously.
Yeah, and then she was waiting for something, the something here being the king. So she dances with these, like, masked dancers, right? And she gets real cozy with them. She makes out one of them, and a big surprise, it's the king.
Oh, drama ensues.
Drama ensues because the king's like, whoo! Boy, this Anne lady, she's young, she's fertile, that's fun.
Jesus Christ.
So here we are. Catherine was married to, I think it's Albert, who was Henry's brother.
Hey, it's editor Chantel back for the last time. We are about to talk about child marriage briefly, so if you don't want to hear about that, you can skip forward about 8 seconds.
Who died young, but they never consummated their marriage.
Okay, because someone was gay.
Well, I think it's more that he was a kid.
Oh, good. Good. Good that they didn't do that then.
Yeah. So, Wolsey, like, kind of starts talking smack about Catherine, right? He's like, I think we shouldn't have Catherine as your queen anymore. It's unbecoming that she was your brother's wife. She's not giving you any sons. Because there was a whole thing in the Catholic Church where you can't marry your brother's wife.
Because sister-in-law means you're their sister-in-law. Like, in the law, you are siblings.
Yeah. So anyways, it's a thing. So that's fun. And then the king's like, I don't know. Probably. I want a son. So hard to get a son with this one. She's not giving me any sons.
Yeah, it's all her fault, definitely.
Big for sure. Sad. Want sons. And like, you have to understand also, like, they were just off something like 60 something years. No, more than that. Like 100 years of just people having kids and them not becoming king, right? So like, I understand the stress, but I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
So
understand but don't agree is going to be a lot of history.
Yeah. So Wolsey introduces a cardinal, Campius, and Gardiner to the king. Campius has come to serve as a judge in the trial that Wolsey is arranging for Catherine, basically trying to get this marriage annulled. Buckingham dies.
Oh no. How?
He gets divorced from his head is the line.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a beheading in the play. Fun.
Yeah, you don't see it because it's off script, but he has this whole speech where he's like, as my divorce from life or something or other. It's quite powerful. I was paying attention. So that happens. Anne Boleyn is shown conversing with an old lady who's basically, I think, like her nurse or her maid or whatever. And she like expresses her sympathy for the queen because, oh my god, it must be so hard to be queen. I could never be queen. And I'm just like, are you sure about that? Are you sure about that, Anne? You sure? Are you sure, Anne? Do you want to try again, Anne? So anyways, she's like all being woeful. And then she gets told that the king has made her a Marchioness of Pembroke. So she gets a title from the king before she becomes queen herself.
Okay. I'm following.
Okay. So there's a trial for Catherine. Catherine's like, Wolsey, you're a dick. And then she refuses to stay for her trial. She's like, fuck this noise. I don't need to be here. I'm not going to be here. Bye-bye. Peace out, Girl Scout. And then the king is like, no, you kind of have to be here. Like, I am doubtful of the legitimacy of our marriage. This is why we're having this trial. Like, you should really stay. And she's like, no, bye. And then Campius, who's the guy from earlier, is like, we can't do this without the queen. And the king's like, fine, I guess. So then Wolsey and Campius, they talk to Catherine, and Catherine just basically tells him, like, you guys are treating me like I am disposable and I'm not fucking about it. So that's fun. Then Norfolk, Suffolk, Surrey, and the Lord Chamberlain, which is like possibly Somerset, that part's kind of fuzzy, plot against Wolsey because they're like, this guy is a piece of shit. He's annoying and we hate him. You know, classic Suffolk, Norfolk, Surrey, Lord Chamberlain kind of shenanigans.
Classic nobles.
Classic nobles. Wolsey had been talking with the Pope because he's a cardinal, right? That's what cardinals do. They talk to the Pope, they talk to the king. Bada bing, bada boom. So to the king, he had been saying like, oh, you should really annul your marriage. And to the Pope, he had been, we really shouldn't annul the marriage.
He's a double crosser.
He's a double crosser. He's playing a double game. So these happenstance their way to the king's desk. The king is like, nope. I don't like you no more, but bye. And then the noblemen mock Wolsey.
Does he get divorced from his head?
He does die at some point, yes.
Cool.
He has a follower, Cromwell, who's not Oliver. His name is Thomas, but he is a piece of shit.
Okay.
He's the reason Anne Boleyn dies.
Oh.
Later on. Yeah, great times. So if you see a Cromwell in English history, he's not good.
He's not a good guy.
Cromwell basically is sent off so that he doesn't like suffer from Wolsey's fall from grace, but you know, Cromwell also loses his head later, so it's good. So Anne Boleyn becomes queen, Thomas Cromwell becomes into royal favor, and he plots against Cranmer, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Catherine is sick, she expresses her continuing loyalty to the king, and wishes the new queen well, because Catherine has done nothing wrong.
Yeah, she seems like she's just been doing everything right, actually.
She was sent from a kingdom that's now part of Spain, with like no money, nothing to her name, and then divorced from the king, like she's destitute, and she's still like clapping her hands for the other queen.
Aw, I love her. Like,
we love a queen who deserved better. It could not have been easy. So anyways, we get to Act 5, which is the end of the play, obviously, but it's also where everything happens.
Yeah, because nothing's happened so far, basically.
Yeah, so the king summons the Archbishop of Canterbury and tells him, like, yo, you my buddy, thy truth and thy integrity is rooted in us, thy friend. So, like, we Gucci. The king confirms his friendship with a gift of a ring, and then there's, like, a huge plot against the Archbishop of Canterbury, Cranmer, here, and he's accused of heresy by the king's council.
Why?
Because Thomas Cromwell is a bad guy. That's why.
Okay.
Yeah. He's told, like, he has to be taken to the Tower as a prisoner, and then he defends himself, shows the ring, and the king's like, Cranmer's a good man. Y'all all suck. and then nothing bad happens to Cranmer. Anne Boleyn gives birth to a daughter, the future Queen Elizabeth I.
Yay.
And then we have Elizabeth's christening, which kind of feels like a wake. Like, it's very, like, about all the things she could become and all the things she's gonna do and all the great nation stuff. And, like, it's very, like, man, we miss this queen, right? Like, propaganda.
Yeah.
Which is why I feel like the play's mostly about her. Like, it's about her existence, her coming into existence, literally, Elizabeth, which I think is kind of sweet. And then we have an epilogue that acknowledges that the play is unlikely to please everyone, but still asks for our approval of it.
Oh, so very classic, like, end of Henry V type situation.
Yeah. In the Stratford adaptation that I watched, they talk about the king and Anne Boleyn, and the king and Anne Boleyn, and the king and Anne Boleyn, and that's kind of all they do. So it's kind of, it's weird. The epilogue that I saw and the epilogue that I read is not the same, but it's okay because you are allowed to do things differently.
I can only assume that the epilogue was the hope that my audience will view, though in reviewing the incidents of my writing, I am unconscious of intentional error. I am nevertheless too sensible of my defects not to think it probable that I may have committed many errors I shall also carry with me. The hope that my audience will view them with indulgence, and that after 45 years of my life dedicated to its service with an upright zeal, the faults of incompetent abilities will be consigned to oblivion.
So we don't let you day drink.
That is why we don't let me day drink in the normally times. Yes, correct.
Yeah. So anyways, that's Henry VIII. There's a lot less, like, heaven and earth mythologizing than in the other plays. I think mostly because of, you know, the whole separation of the Church of England thing, which doesn't fully become a thing until Edward IV, which is the king's next living child.
Really?
Yeah, like, it's not, like, as much of a thing. So what happened is he's all like, do the Church of England, pass the act. So they pass the act, but, like, there's still a lot of fucking Catholics around. I can say that.
Yeah, you of all people can say it.
So there's a lot of Catholics around, right? And when Edward VI becomes king, he, like, makes sure that he's Protestant. And so he's, like, the first real, like, Anglican Protestant king, right? And then he passes the throne down to Lady Jane Grey, who's, like, his cousin. And the only reason he does that is because she's a Protestant. Whereas his sister, Mary I, is a Catholic. Bloody Mary. You know Bloody Mary.
Queen of Scots?
Not Queen of Scots.
Oh, God. Okay.
Different Mary. Mary, I think. Let me double check that for you, though. Yeah, no. So this is Mary Tudor, also known as Bloody Mary. So different. Very confusing because Mary, Queen of Scots, is the mother of our boy James I. But they are different people.
And also sort of associated with blood.
Yes.
Thank you.
Cool. Good. So there's not as much of that, like, whole, like, godly thing that sometimes there is in these plays. And a lot of the stuff is, you know, less fathers and sons and more like fathers, no sons. But I think it's the cute little ode to Queen Elizabeth I.
I like that it's about the little baby.
Yeah.
And I like that it seems very, like, women-centric.
Oh, no, there's two women and a half.
Okay. But it sounds like the plot basically is driven by the women again, like Macbeth.
The plot is driven by people hating women.
Okay, so that's something.
That's something, yeah. So, you know, usually it's the plot is driven by the hatred of other men because they're on the throne. No, this one is the hatred of women. Like, Catherine gets hated on because she can't produce a son. Anne Boleyn will eventually get hated on because she can't produce a son.
And the daughters get hated on because they are not sons. So that's always fun.
Yeah, and Elizabeth I doesn't have children.
Yes, the Virgin Queen is what she gets called.
Yeah, but, like, she did have a friend from her youth that she was, like, very close with, and then, like, in, like, 1660 something, I don't know when, at some point in the 1600s, she had what was called a swelling sickness, and nobody saw her for a year.
Oh, very suspicious.
Suspicious.
Amy, that is the Virgin Queen right there that you're talking about. She surely must have had just a mysterious swelling of the abdomen for a year after she had a very close male friend.
Correct. In 1559, she had her friend Dudley. He has a first name. I don't see it right now.
I choose to believe that Dudley is his first name.
His name is Robert Dudley.
Fine.
So she had Robert Dudley's bedchambers moved next to her own apartments in 1559. And then in 1561, she was mysteriously bedridden. maiden with an illness that caused her body to swell. And then, in 1587, a young man calling himself Arthur Dudley was arrested on the coast of Spain under suspicion of being a spy, and he claimed to be the illegitimate son.
Oh, he was born, huh?
Yep. If he existed, he was born. So.
Cool, cool, cool. Well, everyone surely arrested him because she was the Virgin Queen.
Yeah.
Well, that's a fun little fact.
It is a fun little fact.
So, my thing about this play is I'm glad I did not have to read it.
It is fun to watch, though. Like, the performance that they put on is really fun, and something I want to talk to you about, because I think you're going to think it's cool.
Yeah, hitting me with the analysis.
It's not even analysis, it's just, like, the performance.
Okay.
It's done in, like, a Canadian accent.
Okay. Like, the Canadian accent?
No, like, just, like, an accent, but okay. You know it's Canadian because of the Canadian raising of how the syllables are affected by the Canadian accent.
Yeah, both.
Yeah, so it sounds weirdly Irish.
Okay.
But actually, okay, so it sounds like it's put on with a Newfoundland accent.
Like a Newfoundland accent is what I was going to say as well.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, the Canadian raising is strong in that one. Chantel, can I give you a rating?
I would love a rating.
So on a scale of being a wife to a deposed king who then gets called a witch.
Okay.
As in all the other plays that we read today. Or the king's mistress who gives birth to the future queen of England who was in charge when all those plays were being put on. How would you rate this play?
Okay, I would rate this play being the wife of a deposed king, but actually being a witch, because then you at least get to get exiled and you get to stay far away from the community. And I would like to stay far away from this play.
Fair.
And that's how I feel about it. How would you rate this play, Amy?
I would rate it, my husband died of natural causes and then unfortunately left his stupid brother in charge of our son. And
oh no.
Now I feel kind of icky about it. It's a fun little wrap up, but there's a fucking reason it's not included in any survey courses about Shakespeare.
I'm very glad that they wrapped it up with the Wars of the Roses, because the Wars of the Roses, I feel like, is where all the excitement happens in the political sphere. And then this is more excitement in the domestic sphere, but it doesn't sound like it was really captured adequately.
I think, you know how we were talking about how the other ones were like a propaganda play? Like they were all like propaganda about, like, you know, the Tudors eventually, like they got there eventually, right?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they got there first because Henry VI was the first play to be published, put on. So, you know, you had all that propaganda, I guess, right? I feel like this one is an ode to a recently departed queen.
Okay, yeah.
It's not a political propaganda. She doesn't need to know how great she was.
It's more like a, oh, after her life, we're all sad, but before her life, look what happened. Everyone was also all fighting.
I think with a new king who's like not part of that line, it's like it's the wake of the end of that line, of the end of the Tudor line, because it doesn't really keep going. It becomes a Stuart line, right? So I think it's less propaganda and more like, well, we're done with this now.
It's a cherry on top of an era. It is the sound of a quietly closing door.
Yeah. I mean, it did burn down the globe.
Yeah. It ended with a literal bang.
Ended with a literal bang, but it was, yeah, it's just kind of chill.
It is the WD-40 in the hinges of the Henriad.
Correct.
I have a reason that he might have started with Henry VI Part 2, and that's because that's the one where they freaking explain what the Wars of the Roses are. Where they're like, I shall pick a red rose, and I shall pick a white rose, and if you wear this red rose, you are on my side, and everyone with a white rose can suck it. That's how they talk.
That would check out.
Because Henry VI Part 1 really doesn't focus on the Wars of the Roses, it focuses on the wars with, like,
France.
And then just political turmoil in England in the background messing that up.
Yeah, it's kind of like he was like, oh, Joan of Arc? Cool. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you for bringing that to us today, Amy.
Of course.
If you want to find us, we are at UncitedPod on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. No one's calling it X. We're so over that.
Stop trying to make X happen.
It's not going to happen. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating and review anywhere you listen to podcasts. That really helps us out to reach more people. Next week, we're going to be talking about a wedding poem, because Amy's getting married.
Yeah.
What?
I'm getting married and I'm not even missing the episode that week.
Amy just does not sleep on the podcast. If you want to talk to us, come talk to us. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you in 2 weeks.
And as always, we're excited, unavailable. Yeah, it's kind of like he was like, oh, Joan of Arc? Cool. Yes.
Kisa.
Let's.
Kisa.